Welcome to Nightlife, a bite-size episode.
This is Nightlife. Now, our regular film reviewer, CJ Johnson, is away at the moment, but we are fortunate enough to have Luke Buckmaster, a film critic for flicks.com.au, coming into Nightlife to help us out with your movie reviews this week. Hello, Luke. Welcome to Nightlife.
Hello. Pleasure to be here.
All right, you've got two movies for us to have a look at. One is called Show Dogs, which we'll start with in a moment, and then we'll have a look at Mary Shelley, which is a film about the Frankenstein creator. So, Luke, Show Dogs, what's it all about?
Yes, well, I guess the first thing I would say about Show Dogs is I'm probably not in the target demographic for this particular film. I'll confess that right at the outset. It's how to describe Show Dogs? It's kind of a remake of the Sandra Bullock film Miss Congeniality, unofficial, of course, meets a very kind of vapid and childish film called The Beverly Hills Chihuahua. So it's kind of like, or the mockumentary Best in Show. It's kind of like there's a lot of dogs and there's an undercover crime syndicate and there's a show in Vegas and there's a kind of pageant element to it as well. So it's essentially a bunch of fairly kind of turgid animal jokes strung out for what felt like an eternity. I think it was about 90 minutes or 85 minutes. Done on a bizarrely cheap budget too. I always assumed that you just couldn't do a talking animal movie cheaply. But this film seems to have changed my mind. I mean, you've got the animals, and that alone I would have thought will make the budget quite substantial. Mm-hmm. In this film, in Show Dogs, you can see there's some very clear CGI. So there's pigeons that are so obviously kind of cut out of Photoshop or whatever editing program they use. You can almost kind of see the outline around them and just kind of paste it in. But then you've got what's clearly real dogs and real animals. So there's this bizarre kind of real and ultra fake, which means it sort of feels like watching it, everything is really fake and everything is real. And it's just this very kind of almost mind-melting experience. Very, very weird. And on top of that, you've got these kind of quote-unquote show-stopping moments, like your big kind of chase at the end or your your plane taking off, and these moments of sort of inflated spectacle and showdowns and cartoon villains and hullabaloos. But the car at the end, I got to tell you, the car at the end was going about 10 miles an hour. Will Arnett and the dog behind the wheel, the chase in the bag. I'm thinking, you guys put on some gas, like step on a little bit. And then they get to a hangar. And I'm sure people don't mind if I'm revealing some of the story details of Show Dogs. I'd be absolutely mortified if they did. And they get to a hangar at some point where an airplane, instead of taking off, just kind of goes round and round and round in circles. And I'm thinking right there, that is a metaphor or some sort of symbol for this movie. It's just absolutely failing to launch.
All right, so who's it directed by? Anyone who has a decent pedigree?
A guy called Raja Gosnell, who's his cinematic legacy lies in one of the films I mentioned before, Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
Right.
And he also did The Smurfs a few years ago. So he's kind of in this space of pretty kind of vacuous child's fare. And, I hope I don't sound like...
So this is actually a kid's movie, is it?
Oh, it's absolutely a kid's movie. Yeah, yeah. And I hope I don't sound like some sort of hoity-toity art snob here, because one of my favourite films from last year was Captain Underpants. Mm-hmm. So these, I love a good kid's film. But, the best kid's films bring out the adult and the child and the child and the adult, and they have fun and they have ideas. This film is just a dirge. It's pretty empty in every single way. And I just couldn't believe these guys. It feels like, to confuse the nature of the animal, it feels like a cash cow that they just continually milked.
Not a dog's breakfast.
Not a dog's breakfast. No, also a dog's breakfast, actually. Also a dog's breakfast. That's
right.
Even better.
So the dogs are real, except for the CGI, and they speak?
Yeah, the dogs speak, and the audience can hear them speaking and understands. But in the world of the reality of the, the film, the characters, the humans can just hear barking. So they don't actually explain that, but it's sort of a given. And also in the reality of this film, you get dogs who are just, for some reason, part of the police force. So they just go and they get sent on, little escapades where they're busting criminals and chasing someone down a laneway, and then the dog yells out, "I'm going to take a bite out of crime." And that's kind of this film's idea of a funny joke.
Okay, so the adult is not going to enjoy it. Do you think even if you put yourself in the mind of a 4, 5, 6-year-old that it could be a good film?
Well, yeah, I guess. But, you know, it's, I mean, when you're a kid at that age, it's sort of like light and projections and it's almost entertaining enough. You know, it's kind of like colourful stuff is moving. I don't want to sound like I'm talking down to children. Actually, it's the other way around. I think they should be given really good stories because they deserve it and they should have them. But yeah, sure. But kids are going to get entertained perhaps by an animal that speaks. It's kind of cool looking at listening to an animal speak. That's fun. But to see it strung out for an hour and a half with nothing else to add to the kids, I went home after this, walking out of the cinema, gripping the walls, wondering what kind of reality I just sort of bolted out of. And I started thinking about the better talking animals movies, and in particular George Miller's Babe and Babe 2. They are wonderful films, and there is something about tapping into this alternate reality that's shared by animals that's sort of all around us, but that we can't really access in ourselves. So, conceptually, I guess it's fine.
All right. Well, that is a very, very lukewarm review. Let's have a little bit of a listen to Show Dogs.
Gotta say, can't improve on perfection.
What's that?
That's a bikini wax. When the judges look under the tail, it's important they have a clean view.
Well, in that case, allow me.
Hey, what's that? Looks kind of sticky.
It's payback time.
Hey, wait, what? What's he doing back there?
The pain passes, but the beauty, she remains.
Wait, what?
How many stars are you going to give
one
it?
One star.
One?
It's getting a one star.
Wow.
Yeah, I just can't give it any more than that.
All right, that's pretty damning. All right, let's talk about Mary Shelley, which I hope you will be much nicer about. Now, Mary Shelley is a new film about the life of Mary Shelley, the creator of Frankenstein. And it's a real historic journey too, isn't it, through some of the characters of her world, such as Byron and Percy Shelley, who will pop up as well.
Yeah, it is. And the interesting thing about this film, I'll put some caveats around interesting, but the interesting thing about this film is that it becomes quite quickly a story of Percy Shelley, Mr. Shelley, as much as Mary Shelley, which, while I've sort of introduced that as being interesting, I think ultimately cuts Mary Shelley fairly significantly short and made me think, well, why are we actually watching a film where, the main characters other than Mary Shelley are men, other men in her lives? And it's got a very kind of strange ideology to this film. It didn't sit right with me. It starts off, so it's got two big challenges, I guess, or two big boxes to tick. And the first one is that it's a biopic. So they have to explore the real person's actual life, et cetera, et cetera. And the second one is that it's about a writer. So they have to in some way illustrate the writing process. And they get through the latter by showing her, scribbling on a notepad with these really kind of poetic voiceovers, which is a very base way of going about that. And the former, the biopic element, I just didn't think it was a very wise move to make it so much about her relationship with Percy. And I think the film comes very close to, it feels like it was a film that's kind of predicated on turning this into a feminist story, as in she wrote Frankenstein as a response in some way to the men in her lives. And just kind of next to that question, or underneath it in some way, is also the question of, well, do we then excuse their bastardry because they helped inspire art? Or do we then kind of appreciate that art comes from dark places? And these are very difficult questions, which I thought the film was completely unqualified to answer. And I was quite disappointed by that structural focus. I thought she's the interesting character here, and I don't see why we have to keep going to Percy.
Now, another interesting character in it is her philosopher father, and there are mentions too of her mother, Mary Wollstonecraft Godwin, who was a relative of the person who the suburb of Wollstonecraft is Sydney is named after. So there are some Australian connections to it. Yeah. I think the screenwriter is Australian as well on this one. What about this? The characters around her? There were some other interesting ones. I mean, her sister does play a role as well.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, and they kind of have a trio with her, and yeah, that's true. But I did think that the focus was probably in terms of inspiration, or definitely in terms of inspiration, came from the men, which, again, is a fairly unusual way of doing it. And I think that the film's kind of trying to grapple with Percy, and Lord Byron also is in there.
They're huge characters to have.
Big
in a
characters,
film, aren't they?
Yeah, big characters. And they sort of have to suggest, or they feel inclined to suggest, that these people are kind of outside the square. They're living a sort of by their own rules and dancing to a different beat. Which kind of is one step away from saying, well, they're not really bad people, even though they, you know, leave their wife and abandon their daughter and have got blood on their hands. They're not really bad people. They're just sort of differently wired, which I thought was a bit stupid, to be honest. But one thing that the film kind of did communicate quite well was how much was going on in her life at such a young age. I mean, she was 18 when she wrote Frankenstein. And it's when you're watching the film, that sort of moment, they obviously build up to that, and it comes a little bit later on. But when you're watching the film, it feels like the very adult journeys of a much older person. So I am fascinated by the idea of what the actual author was like, and how she navigated those sort of stormy waters. And I also thought that, you know, there is a good film in here. I definitely don't think this is the good film.
Elle Fanning plays Mary Shelley. What do you think of the job she does?
I liked her performance. Yeah, I think her performance is very strong. She's probably the best part of the film, other than the cinematography and the technical aspects, which are very well framed. It's got this sort of damp, wet, British kind of feel about it, which is it is formally a very impressive work. Yeah, I thought she was good. I thought it was a strong performance. She holds herself very well.
Let's have a little listen to Mary Shelley.
We are each to write a ghost story. It's a competition. The woman is not intelligent enough to form ideas of her own.
What's wrong with you?
You, Miss Godwin, have the chance to prove me wrong.
Don't you recognize Victor Frankenstein?
This is no ghost story.
It chilled me to the bone. You must get your story published, Mary.
Curious subject matter for a young lady.
Are you suggesting the work belongs to Mr. Shelley? It is my story.
How many stars are you giving it, Luke?
I didn't like this film either. Maybe 1.5 stars.
You possibly. Are a harsh critic.
Possibly a two.
Oh. Well, you know, I know I'm no film critic. I saw it too. I actually quite liked it.
You quite liked it? So it appealed to you better than it did me, obviously.
Well, I'm probably more the target market, aren't I? You know, a woman who quite likes her 18th and 19th century English literature. So they kind of had a captive audience with me.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, Luke, not a lot of recommendations there. So at what level would you say go see this film? 1 and 1.5 doesn't sound like you want to go see this.
No, I would avoid both of these films. In fact, bizarrely enough, I did spend some time imagining what would happen if they combined the elements of both. So it was dogs and Mary Shelley, and I thought that would be fabulous. But, you know, when you're this sort of bored and agitated by a film experience, your mind wanders.
Luke, thank you very much. Lovely to have you on board, and you'll be here talking to Phil Clark next week on Nightlife.
Great. Thank you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.